very special guest today. Her name is KT McFarland. She is a national security analyst appearing regularly on Fox News and Fox Business. She is the host on FoxNews.com's their internet show called DEFCON 3. It is one of the internet's most watched national security shows. She served a national security post in the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations, a member of the Senate Armed Service Committee staff in 1981, and she was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration. KT, thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
All right. Now tell us, if you would, to dive right in here, tell us your assessment, if you would, of the current president's or the current administration's foreign policy. Where have we succeeded and where are we failing?
Well, the one success is Osama bin Laden, and you can't quibble with that. It was a tough call. He made a decision. You know, should he have thanked George Bush for all the intelligence gathering work that went on before? Yes. But anyway, the bottom line is Osama bin Laden is dead, and it was done on Obama's watch. So he gets full credit for that. And no doubt in the campaign, he will be portrayed as, you know, Obama the Osama slayer. Now, when you get past that, though, everything, I think, is pretty bad, and it's about to get a whole lot worse. And I would start with the greatest national security threat we face is, in fact, not Al-Qaeda. It's not Islamic Jihad. It's not China. It's not the Middle. It's the economy. Because
wow.
If you don't turn that around, everything else is collateral damage. If you don't fix the economy, there's no money for military or intelligence or foreign assistance. And if we have to keep borrowing, especially from foreign nations like China, they're going to want something for it. You know, we're going to have to give up foreign policy goals and pull our punches in order to keep our banker happy. Just look at what's happening in Europe right now. It's an economic disaster. There's no military might to speak of, and their position in the world. You know, 100 years ago, Europe ruled the world, and today Europe is sort of an afterthought. They're beggar nations. So I think that the number one goal should be to fix the economy. And I say that as a foreign policy person and a military expert, and I've done that my whole life. But you don't get the economy fixed, nothing else matters.
Wow. The impact of the spiraling debt, $5 trillion, and we've heard this over and over again at the Republican National Convention, and I agree with you. I think that the economy is huge and our debt's huge. We're weakening our position in the world. Specifically, when it comes to the Middle East, how does having debt like that and our position weakening lower our influence?
Well, the countries, I mean, look at what's happening this next week in Iran. Iran are probably our greatest enemy on the national stage, and Iran about to become a nuclear weapon state, and an Iran which wants to control the Persian Gulf region, everything from the Mediterranean to the Persian Gulf, from Syria all the way over to Afghanistan. Now, why? Because if you control the Persian Gulf, you control the world's flow of oil. And if you do that, you help, you know, you're really in a controlling seat in the world economy. So what's happening next week in Iran? 120 nations are showing up at the non-aligned summit, including the leader of Afghanistan, Karzai, the man we've spent $1 trillion and lost 2,000 American lives to prop up. He's going to Iran. The newly elected president of Egypt, Morsi, who's a Muslim Brotherhood, who's managing a Muslim Brotherhood Islamist takeover of the entire Egyptian ruling political establishment. He's going to Iran. And the former head of the U.N. is going to Iran. So much for isolating Iran, for getting the world
right
to turn its back on Iran. And by the fact that we pay for our energy, that we don't make our own energy or enough of our own energy, oil, natural gas, that we have to buy it from other countries, the countries that we buy it from, either directly or indirectly, are getting rich on it. And they're the countries which don't like us very much. It's countries like Russia and Venezuela. And as you just pointed out, Iran. Now, we don't buy Iranian oil, but by the fact that we, the world, are so dependent on Middle East oil means that they're in a position to really call a lot of shots. And in addition, the vast transfer of wealth that's gone from the developed world to the petro-states, largest transfer of wealth in the history of the world, means that they're in a position not only to build up their own military, but to support terrorist and Islamic groups of their own.
You know, when I hear comments from this administration that say things like we're leading from behind, it occurs to me, and I've seen you make comments similar to this, that it creates a vacuum of leadership. Tell me what that says, that creating a vacuum of leadership. Tell me what that says to our friends and what it says to our enemies.
Well, Secretary Rice, I was in Tampa yesterday, and I was with Secretary Rice. We were on a foreign policy panel together, and then she spoke at the convention last night and made the same point. She said, if America doesn't lead, if America gives up its leadership role, if America leads from behind, then what happens to the world? Who then sets the rules? If it's not us, if we're not the most economically military powerful country in the world, who sets the world's rules? Well, the countries like China, you really want China to set the rules? Iran, you want Iran to set the world's rules? Or are there no rules? Mm. And that's even worse. You know, the United States, at the end of World War II, taking over the role that Britain had had for decades before, kept the world's oceans safe for trade. Now, what happens if the United States no longer does that? If then it's sort of every man is a pirate unto himself, every nation sets its own rules, then I think you really do have law of the jungle. So it's extremely important. And I'm talking about, you know, American superpower, world leadership, what does that mean? It's a whole lot of things go into that. It's economic superiority and a thriving economy. It's a government that's transparent, and people around the world look to the American government and way of life is saying, gee, I want to be like that. I emulate it. I want to follow it. It's military strength, but it's also that moral sense of leadership. And we're really, under this, the last 4 years, we've walked away from all of them.
Mm. We're talking today to KT McFarland, national security expert. Obviously, I'm a conservative. I want a conservative elected in Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. What do we know from a national security, from an intelligence standpoint, you know, what do we know about Mitt Romney? What do we anticipate his foreign policy is going to be, and what does that look like?
Well, you're not really sure, and I would say that I've worked for three presidents up close and personal in the White House and in the Pentagon, and any president who's a candidate says he's going to do one thing, and then once he gets in office, you know, events change. September 11 happens. The Iranian hostage mission happened to Jimmy Carter. So you don't know in advance how they're going to react to events, because the events haven't happened yet. What you can do, though, is glean sort of ideas of where they want to be. Romney and Ryan are putting national security, I think, in the position it belongs. First, they're going to fix the economy. That's what Reagan did. When I worked for Reagan,
right,
he spent the first 4 years building up the military, but not challenging adversaries. He spent the first 4 years fixing the economy. And once the economy was fixed and robust and growing again, then he could turn to taking down the Soviet Union. But he didn't try to take down the Soviet Union on day one. He did it after the economy was repaired. So I think you'll see that emphasis on the economy. I think you'll also see the notion that the United States will support the freedom agenda, but not necessarily at the barrel of a gun. I don't think it's going to be Bush foreign policy, which is we support freedom, we support regime change, and we're going to send in the Marines to deliver it. I think it'll be more like a Reagan foreign policy, which is to use economic warfare and the economic weapon to convince people of the countries to themselves change their regimes, which is ultimately how the Soviet Union and the Iron Curtain came down. They did it. We didn't do it for them.
There you go. That was Reagan's mantra, wasn't it? That they were dying on the inside from an economic standpoint.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that was the collapse.
Yes.
Specifically, as it applies to Iran and Israel, that seems to be the hotbed right now of issues. And Iran has said they want to wipe Israel off the face of the map. What happens, you know, pre-election or after election? How do you see that unfolding? Do you see Iran? Obviously, they're gaining strength. The UN meeting's there. Do you see them striking on Israel? And if they do, how do we respond, or do we respond at all?
Well, I think Iran likes things just the way they are. They're not about to attack anybody. They're just tootling along, building their nuclear weapons, having 120 nations pay homage to them next week. So they're not about to start any conflict. The question, though, is the Israeli question. I think the most important relationship the next president's going to have is with the leadership of Israel. And normally, and I've been at this for 40 years, normally countries don't have friends, they have interests. And who's the head of a country doesn't matter as much as what the economic and other interests dictate. In this case, it's different. With Israel and the United States, because Israel cannot live with a nuclear Iran. They've said it. They are the children and grandchildren of Holocaust survivors. They cannot afford to ignore a leader who says, we're going to wipe you off the face of the earth, and he says it every week, and also is acquiring the weapons that will enable him to do that. So they can't live with that. Now, they can't finish a war, but they could start a war with Israel. And the question that the Israeli leaders have is, will they believe an American president who says, I'll be with you, I'll stop Iran, whatever it takes, economic, whatever it takes, we'll do it. If they don't believe that, and I don't think they do with Obama, then they're going to feel that they've got to take action into their own hands probably sooner rather than later.